Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So it wasn't exactly Reagan at Brandenburg Gate, was it? Take your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Trump and Putin at their post-game presser, and some pointed yet not surprising questions to both from the press corps, including Associated Press reporter, who asked the question that set off a firestorm. The question of who do you believe? Yep. Do you believe President Trump, your intelligence community with respect to Russian hacking, or do you believe Vladimir Putin per his vociferous denials, as Trump recounted in their meeting?
Mr. President, you tweeted this morning that it's U.S. foolishness, stupidity, and the Mueller probe that is responsible for the decline in U.S. relations with Russia. Do you hold Russia at all accountable for anything in particular? And if so, what would you consider them that they are responsible for?
Yes, I do. I hold both countries responsible. I think that the United States has been foolish. I think we've all been foolish. We should have had this dialogue a long time ago, a long time, frankly, before I got to office. And I think we're all to blame. I think that the United States now has stepped forward along with Russia, and we're getting together, and we have a chance to do some great things, whether it's nuclear proliferation in terms of stopping. We have to do it. Ultimately, that's probably the most important thing that we can be working on.
So that was the first part of it. Both countries are to blame, and this is the next part of it.
A question for President Putin. Thank you. Two questions for you, sir. Can you tell me what President Trump may have indicated to you about officially recognizing Crimea as part of Russia? And then secondly, sir, does the Russian government have any compromising material on President Trump or his family?
That's the Putin piece. That's not it. The question of whether or not you believe Putin or your intelligence community. Do you believe Putin or your intelligence community?
And this is what happened.
Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe?
So let me just say that we have two thoughts. You have groups that are wondering why the FBI never took the server. Why haven't they taken the server? Why was the FBI told to leave the office of the Democratic National Committee? With that being said, all I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Machiavellian genius
Or is he getting played by Putin?
Well, I would go even further than that. I would go where the left is at present, which is high crimes and misdemeanors. That's what former CIA director, and
Mr. Mean?
Known liar John Brennan had to say.
I cannot understand how the national security team can continue to abide by this, and how Pompeo and Bolton and Kelly can continue in their jobs. This, I think, rises to the point of good American patriots resigning in objection to that performance by Donald Trump. Again, words, I'm at a loss of words to describe just how outrageous his words, his statements, his behavior has been. And one can only conclude that he fears Vladimir Putin, and that one-on-one discussion, who knows what was discussed there, and how Mr. Putin now is the master puppeteer of Donald Trump, the person who is in our Oval Office.
So he believes President Putin over his own intelligence agencies. And that was, I mean, CNN, I was exhausted watching them. I was like, this has shocked the world. This is disgraceful, disrespectful, treasonous. But then I flipped over to Fox, and Dan, some, they weren't loving President Trump's actions either.
Trump clearly should not have created any semblance of moral equivalency between our intel community, even if it has its flaws, which it does, and the assurances of Vladimir Putin.
This was the time and the place for the president to look Putin squarely in the eye and said, you will be punished for what you did in 2016, and don't ever think about doing that again.
But he didn't. And that's what made it disgusting. That's what made his performance disgusting. I'm sorry, this is the only way I feel. It's not a right or left thing to me. It's just wrong. A U.S. president on foreign soil talking to our biggest enemy or adversary or competitor, I don't know how we define them these days, is essentially letting the guy get away with this.
Yeah, that was Neil Cavuto, of course. So here's the question. You know, he's obviously very upset about the Mueller investigation. He mentioned the Mueller investigation repeatedly throughout the press conference. And
if he brings up Hillary one more time, I mean, honestly, we know that you beat her in the Electoral College. We know. He doesn't need to bring it up. Please continue, Dan.
And so the thing I don't understand is why he can't bridge the two. You can be aghast at the decisions that have been made by senior executives at FBI and Department of Justice for the past 2 years, and also recognize that Putin is a KGB thug and that Russia is a threat to freedom wherever it exercises authority or exerts influence. I don't understand why those two things can't be bridged. They seem fairly straightforward to me. Now, not everybody was buying into the hysteria with respect to Trump and raising the specter of treason. In point of fact, Stephen Cohen, who is a well-regarded former Russian studies professor at both NYU and Princeton, was on with Tucker Carlson last night, and he suggested that the greatest threat to our representative republic at present
is Mexico,
is the attempt to undermine Trump.
No, and nor have I in these decades you mentioned ever heard an elected member of Congress say that we should have no relations with the Russians at all. Presumably that would include nuclear weapons control. When I see, I guess it was a Democrat, it's on the bottom of your screen, asking what are the Russians doing in the White House anyway? Well, they're doing with President Trump the national security of our nation, because what's at stake here is a proposal by Putin of Russia, by Trump of America, to join hands in an alliance against international terrorism.
Right.
And I would have asked you, if you had asked me a few days ago, what's the number one threat to the United States today? I would have said international terrorism. I don't know if you agree, Tucker, but it's certainly up there. Today, I would say it's this assault on President Trump, because it's been going on a year. And can we be clear? What he's being accused of is treason. This has never happened in America, that there's a Russian agent in the White House. And we've had a whole array of allegations, from Putin helped him get in the White House to his associates are doing wrong things with Russians, that Flynn did something wrong in talking, his former national security advisor did something wrong with talking to the Russian ambassador. There's no evidence that there was any wrongdoing, and indeed Flynn should have talked to the Russian ambassador. That was his job. So this is beyond belief now, and has become, by this I mean this assault on Trump and his loyalty, this has become a national security threat to us in itself.
Take your calls, 312-642-5600 after this.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Here's how Trump started his address to the world after his sit-down with Putin. This is a high note.
But our relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of about 4 hours ago. I really believe that. Nothing would be easier politically than to refuse to meet, to refuse to engage, but that would not accomplish anything. As president, I cannot make decisions on foreign policy in a futile effort to appease partisan critics or the media or Democrats who want to do nothing but resist and obstruct. Constructive dialogue between the United States and Russia affords the opportunity to open new pathways toward peace and stability in our world. I would rather take a political risk in pursuit of peace than to risk peace in pursuit of politics.
That was a good line there, and that was Reagan-esque. And I mean that quite literally. In terms of human qualities, he and I had communicativeness, and this helped us carry on normally. But when you talk about friendly relations in politics, it's not the friendship of schoolmates. You know who said that? That's Mikhail Gorbachev on Ronald Reagan on the occasion of Ronald Reagan's passing. I take the death of Reagan very hard. He was a man whom fate set by me in perhaps the most difficult years at the end of the 20th century, when everyone felt we lived under the threat of nuclear conflict and it felt as if the arms race was spiraling out of control, that we couldn't control the military machine properly. He entered history as a man who was instrumental in bringing about the end of the Cold War. Well, yeah, so was Gorbachev. Accidentally, because of the internal contradictions of the Soviet Union. But the note about Gorbachev and Reagan carrying on normally, engaging normally, but, you know, they're not going out for beers. That's the difference. Reagan, this is from the Reagan Foundation website, talking about the relationship with the Soviet Union. We don't mistrust each other because we're armed. We're armed because we mistrust each other. Reagan believed if the mistrust was eliminated, then so too could the dangerous destabilizing weapons. He was confident that if he could just get the Soviet counterpart in a room to tell him face-to-face that America had no hostile intent, the mistrust would begin to evaporate. Instinctively, he knew it could not be accomplished through the traditional diplomacy of a bureaucratic State Department. So to the horror of some longtime career government employees, he did what no president ever done. While recovering from the assassination attempt in 81, he handwrote a letter to Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev in reply to Brezhnev's rather belligerent letter sent less than 6 weeks after Reagan's assumption of office. In his reply, Reagan sought to find common ground and to establish a better tone to relations between the White House and the Kremlin. And obviously Brezhnev died in 82 and then enters Gorbachev. So the problem, I mean, the hysteria from the left, and remember, these are the people that over the last 40 years have alternated between believing the Soviets would win the Cold War, rooting for the Soviets to win the Cold War, and more recently ridiculing Republicans who identified Russia as a threat. So let's just remember their standing on this issue. So the treason stuff is hysterical and ridiculous. However, the unwillingness to draw a moral distinction between our country and Russia to say, the Nunez report, for example, clearly lays out the evidence that Russian intelligence operatives were behind meddling in the election, hacking emails and the like. And that's a problem. And it's a problem we discussed. And President Putin denied it, but it's still a problem. We disagree on that, just as we disagree on the recognition of the annexation of Crimea. We disagree on that.
But it's the president of the United States not believing his own intelligence agencies. But I understand. I mean, if I were in his position, not really being trustworthy right now of the FBI, don't really like what they've done. That doesn't sit well with me.
But it's not just the FBI that's established the Russians as the responsible party.
Department of Justice and, yeah.
The House Intelligence Committee.
Yeah.
Their report.
So do you think what is your feelings about President Trump and his meeting?
I don't know about the meeting, and the conspiracy theories about compromise and passing intelligence to Putin in the closed-door meeting. I mean, it's just that. It's conspiracy theories. It's recklessness. There's no evidence to suggest any of that. It's absurd. Do I think Trump is the Manchurian candidate for Putin? No. Is Putin his puppet master? No. That's all hair on fire stuff from the left.
I mean, I honestly thought Jake Tapper was going to have a heart attack. He was out of his mind. Yeah, hair on fire.
but it could have, he could have presented better in that post game presser. The going down the rabbit hole of Peter Strzok and Hillary Clinton and the electoral count in 2016.
And why didn't we take her server?
I mean, it's just unnecessary. And the focus should be on Russia.
Right.
Russia presents a threat. It's fine to want to be able to communicate for the purposes of still dealing with the nuclear weapons, since we combined have 90% of the world's nuclear weapons, the two countries. It's fine to talk about and take strident positions on his usurpation of Crimea, gambit into Ukraine, antagonism towards NATO countries, threats against Baltic states.
And what about the downing of the Malaysian flight MH17 in Ukrainian airspace? They proved that was Russian forces. Well, that's 300 people dead. That's why a lot of European ally nations are not, they're not happy that President Trump even met with Putin.
I just go back again to say you can, take to task the senior leadership of the FBI and the DOJ, as we have over the last 2 years, and also send the unmistakable message that Putin and Trump disagree on these seminal issues they're discussing, and we're trying to work to constructive outcomes, but we have some real disagreements, got to open the channels of communication, and we recognize that Russia is not a democracy representative republic the way America's representative republic, despite Putin suggesting that
but
it was.
We did get something positive out of it. I mean, Vladimir Putin did offer us to question those 12 that were named on the indictment.
I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
Yeah,
and there's
Robert
Mueller could someday interview those 12 people if he went to Moscow.
It's ridiculous. It's just the same thing as Putin being asked the question about allowing the 12 that were indicted to be extradited to the U.S. Well, you go ahead and make the formal request, and then we also have some people we'd like to see extradited to Russia for questioning.
I was under my impression that they were offering Robert Mueller a chance to go to Moscow to interview their investigators and possibly the 12 people who were named on the indictment.
That's one of the things he said, and that is absurd. It's ridiculous. That's not an offer. That's just propaganda. Bob Mueller's going to go over there, and he's going to
an all expense paid trip to Moscow.
I mean, it's just the idea that those 12 that are indicted are ever going to be on American soil, that we would ever allow Putin to extradite Americans. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's a stupid conversation. It's a conversation that AP reporter would engender, and people would obsess about it. It's just dumb. It's Bob Mueller's going to go over there, and it's going to be a legitimate inquiry of fact. Mm-hmm. And Putin has kind of no idea what's going on, particularly with relative to something this sensitive. I mean, come on, goodness gracious, Chris and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I have a theory I want to run by you. I wonder if this was more of Trump's version of a Russian reset, but he wasn't foolish enough to bring a plastic red button. And the thing that I'm trying to emphasize here is there's so many moving parts to this. You have propaganda, like you just discussed. You have political posturing. You have people trying to score points, the respect issue. And now we're going to try to dissect that whole mess and say, okay, you should have went up there and you should have wagged your finger at him and you should have told him how bad he was, when there's really bigger fish to fry when it comes to Russia.
Yeah, but he didn't have to wag his finger. I mean, so the kind of the knee-jerk Trump supporters. Okay, what I'm suggesting is not that he wag his finger, that he walk across and give him a noogie, that he push him down and kick dirt on. I'm saying, when asked about who you believe, I believe my intelligence community. I believe the members of Congress on the Hill that have done painstaking work to put together a report that indicates that Russia attempted to meddle in the 2016 election. Putin and I disagree on that, and we're going to have to work out that disagreement going forward. This was the first meeting. What is so difficult about that?
Okay, I just want to try to put that right there into context. He just came out of a meeting with them, and we don't know the particulars of that meeting, but let's just try to imagine for a second. So Putin's in the room with him, and he's definitively telling him, this is all BS, don't believe it. Now, you're standing there, you're absorbing that, and you either are going to believe that guy, and you're going to move past this issue and try to get to the meat and potatoes of the real issues.
Well, that is a real issue. That is a real issue. And you have that exchange in the meeting, and then you come on and say, yeah, we had an exchange in the meeting about that, and we disagree. And I communicated we disagree.
Is that issue a stumbling block in comparison to the nuclear issues that we have to deal with?
Well, I mean,
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but explain to me why they can come out and say we have a disagreement on Crimea. Putin, we did by a lawful referendum, and Trump doesn't recognize the annexation of Crimea. Why can they publicly disagree about that, but not the meddling?
I understand, but that brings me back to my original thought. There's a lot of moving parts here, and you need to pick and choose, you know, your battles within this major battle, and say to yourself, what am I really trying to achieve in this meeting between the two countries? And I'm not trying to, you know, spin off of, on a different thing. I'm just saying, I think what he did is he selectively said, I'm just going to say to you right now, we're going to get past this one issue right here because we have bigger issues, and let's just all move forward to what's going to be productive than the drama. I mean, I'm not saying that what was happened with the election part of it wasn't bad. I'm not saying, but are there bigger things? Let's get past these minor things and go for the real issues. That's what I'm just trying to throw out there as a hypothesis.
All right. Thanks for the call, Chris. Appreciate it. Lucy in Lowell, Indiana.
Yes. Thank you for putting me on. I want to continue along the vein of your speaker who was just on just now. I think that Trump is a couple of chess moves ahead of us here. By doing this, he has successfully kept open the probe into the corruption of our government. And this is the bigger fish to fry. We really need to find out what was on that server, how the Democratic Committee was operating. We've got to clean the deep state out. And by not bowing down and saying, okay, Russia was the entire problem here. He is keeping this open, and he's willing to take the heat so that he can clean the corruption out of our government.
All right. Thanks for the call, Lucy. Greg in Schaumburg.
Dan, I also agree with the caller too. Before, and right before that he spoke, you talked in essence about leaders presenting a vision. Now, I understand your point about a direct, you know, dig at the intelligence community. And later I will post this on Facebook for you. But there is a scenario. What Trump did in a mistake is he went down the line of the server only. And Amy, the server's critical. Here's why. Breitbart last year posted an article talking about the case that it was impossible for the amount of data to be uploaded because the transfer speeds would not allow it. And the web log that they subsequently required showed it was dramatically higher, and it could only have been transferred by means of an attached device. Now, the ramifications of that, based on what we know, with the Pakistanis and Wasserman Schultz having hired him and they having disappeared, and the Justice Department having covered it all up, and anybody that is of a certain nature in the government are technically illiterate. Trust me.
Yeah. Okay.
All of those particular points militate for what I think the first person was talking about in presenting a vision.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Greg. I just remind people that you heard what Gorbachev had to say about Reagan. You heard Reagan's approach to Brezhnev and then Gorbachev. And also remember that at Brandenburg Gate, in Gorbachev's presence, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. We didn't get that moment yesterday, did we?
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. There was a wink. There was a soccer ball. But it's this moment that lit Washington, D.C., largely both sides of the aisle on fire.
I believe the intelligence community and also the House Intelligence Committee that Russia meddled in it. We should do everything we can to hold them accountable.
People came to me, Dan Coates came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So he believes Russia over American intelligence.
Or at least he's essentially offering a moral equivalence between the two. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Just a couple of years ago, Mitt Romney was ridiculed by Obama and the same D.C. press corps for suggesting Russia was the greatest adversary America faced in the 21st century. And fast forward, but 6 years, and you have think pieces in Politico like Putin's attack on the U.S. is our Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
So, yeah, we've come a long way, baby, in the last 6 years, or at least the D.C. press corps and the Democrats have. Joe in Crestwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think that, although this seems to be a pretty serious affair, I think that most people are way more concerned about this so-called deep state and the idea that there's a political class in the United States that is basically above the law, and that we really don't need to worry about Russia because we both have enough nuclear weapons to blow each other off the planet, and it's probably never going to occur, basically because of the outcome of that.
Well, yeah, but there are other things to worry about other than nuclear war with respect to Russia, aren't there?
There are. There's definitely other things to worry about, but I think that this so-called notion of a shadow government that really runs the show, if this really exists, I think it sets people more than anything to do with Russia for right now, because these are supposedly fellow Americans who are no longer following the rule of law or following the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call, Joe. The other Joe in Villa Park.
Hey, could you guys imagine the outrage if they would have caught Trump off mic saying, wait till after the elections and I could be more flexible? Well, wait, that was Obama that said that a couple of years ago. I apologize.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, thanks
all right.
for bringing that up.
Thanks for the call, Joe, and for the Democrats saying, you know, how dare you even meet with Putin? Let's not forget that President Obama met privately with Putin to discuss Syria. They couldn't come to terms on that, obviously.
Hillary had the reset button with Russia.
Right, with and then the hot mic moment that was just described with Medvedev, one of Putin's actual stooges.
And Putin wanted President Trump to win. I mean, he said so yesterday.
President Putin, did you want President Trump to win the election?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Because he talked about bringing the Russian relationship back to normal, Putin said.
And that's, I mean, President Trump knows what he thinks, and he believes that Russia is not the primary threat to America, that China is, and that it would be absurd to pass up a chance to become closer to a government that might help us. I was trying to process why did he just say what he's saying? What did he do? And our caller, I thought, said it perfectly, that maybe that was the reset button between this Trump administration and Putin.
I think that this is so much more personal for him. I mean, I think it comes across in his remarks, rambling as they often are. I think this is about the offense that he takes at the Mueller investigation and its persistence and how that's impeding what he would like to do, how it's a major distraction. And I think he takes every opportunity to essentially brandish his perspective and the evidence so far that's decidedly in his favor against Mueller and against the sort of left establishment. And so thus you get Hillary Clinton and you get his reviews of Peter Strzok's testimony and you get the kind of regurgitated lines you've heard for months and months now about the Mueller investigation, much of which are true. But I just say again, you can be critical on the merits of the senior judgment of senior executives at FBI and DOJ and bridge the two, say that we disagree about Russian meddling, the attempt to meddle in the 2016 election. We have this evidence that's been put together by House and Senate Intelligence Committees, by the special investigator, by the Department of Justice, and it's pretty persuasive to me. Putin and I disagree about that, just like we disagree about Crimea, just like we disagree about Syria. We disagree on a lot of things, just like we disagree about whether Germany should ink a deal with the Russians for a pipeline. Yeah. We disagree about a lot of things. So we want to have constructive engagement, but understand there are many disagreements. Some hopefully we can resolve in a way that's, beneficial, from my perspective to America, from his to Russia. And some we may not. But you don't know unless you try. That's a reasonable position. What he did yesterday, sort of middling Putin versus the intelligence community, that was not helpful. And it's, frankly, it's just not accurate. On the merits, it's wrong. It's incorrect.
I mean, did he not hear Rod Rosenstein just, Friday?
The defendants worked for two units of the main intelligence directorate of the Russian general staff, known as the GRU.
Yeah. Rod Rosenstein for president, says Ruth Marcus in The Washington Post.
Oh, really?
I mean, this is the thing. It's so easy to rally the defense to Trump because the left is so unglued. I mean, the Benedict Arnold, the high crimes and misdemeanors stuff. They're unglued. But that doesn't make Trump's performance acceptable.
Right.
Alex in West Dundee, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I think he just did it to antagonize the Democrats. But, I mean, I don't know how they could complain about anything when we meddled with the Israeli elections and nobody says anything about that. Oh. And it's free for the United States to go over there and meddle over there. And that we're so offended. Why don't we have better computers that can't get hacked? Why don't they worry about that side of the whole thing?
Thanks for the call, Alex. Okay, we didn't meddle in the Israeli election the way that Russia attempted to meddle in ours. We're conflating issues here. Sending campaign operatives to support candidates in another country, kind of openly assisting one candidate or the other for president or prime minister of another country, is not the same thing as illicitly hacking into emails or running agitprop campaigns on Facebook. It's not the same thing. People need to stop saying we meddle in a... We're talking about illegal activities. We're talking about hacking. We're not talking about formally participating in campaigns or even informally participating in campaigns. Those are different things. Mike in Union, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. My point is, with John Brennan, such outrage and, a loss for words. Mike Pompeo is director of the CIA, now currently the Secretary of State. There's a whole premise that the president doesn't know anything that's going on. And I just think maybe he does know what's going on, and there's maybe a little bit more to the story than we know about. And let's hope so, because I'm not going to be like a Democrat. Maybe I will become like a Democrat and stick with my guy and give him the benefit of the doubt other than all these other people that are quick to crucify, our own. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt, Dan. His performance wasn't the best. I agree with you on that. It never has been. But the end result's always been good for us. So let's see what happens. Let's roll with it.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. An interesting piece on Wall Street Journal from another former world leader, Tony Abbott, the former Prime Minister of Australia. He writes, the holder of the world's most significant office should always be taken seriously. Erratic and ill-disciplined, though Mr. Trump often seems, there's little doubt that he is proving a consequential president. On the evidence so far, when he says something, he means it. And when he says something consistently, it will happen. For Australia, Trump so far has been a good president, despite his testy initial conversation with Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. He's honored the very bad deal, quote unquote, that President Obama made to take boat people from Nauru and Manus Island to settle in the U.S. As weightier allies found at the NATO summit this week, Mr. Trump is reluctant to help those who don't pull their weight, and who can blame him? America's been the world policeman, the guarantor of a modicum of restraint from the world's despots and fanatics. No other country has had both the strength and the goodwill for this essential task. The truth is the rest of the world needs America much more than America needs us. The U.S., and he goes on to explain why. You know, it's just a perspective of rooting for America from an ally. It's an understanding that Trump is, you know, advancing much of what he said he would do. According to Abbott, in Trump's first year, he acted on 64% of the policy ideas proposed in the Heritage Foundation's Mandate for Leadership agenda. Not bad compared with Ronald Reagan's 49%. So on the conservative reform score, he has done a lot of good. I don't think the performance yesterday was helpful. I don't think that he should have equated Putin and the intelligence community and implicitly members of Congress who've been also participating in this investigation and pulling together of information. But I'm not saying high crimes and misdemeanors either. But there has to be a standard you hold the president to. And he didn't meet that standard yesterday with Putin, in my view. Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Thanks for taking my call, Dan. I agree with some of the other callers in regards to things like meddling in Israel and John Brennan, who is known to have voted for a socialist. How that guy ever got to be the director of the CIA, I'll never understand. But there is a bombshell that was dropped by Putin in the interview that he was given by Mike Wallace. And that was a Russian company was indicted for this espionage work. And when that company hired an American lawyer and said, okay, prove it, all of a sudden Mueller backed off. He didn't have any evidence, or he didn't want to disclose what evidence he had.
Yeah, it was not
a real big indictment.
Well, right.
On Mueller.
Well, yes, we talked about that. We talked about that with Andy McCarthy. Clearly, Mueller was caught flat-footed, did not expect those that company and its employees to have American legal representation and actually show up in an American court. Those indictments are press release indictments. They're not serious indictments because you're never going to see those Russians in an American court. But fair enough, Dan. Thanks for the call. Pete in Montgomery.
Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. So my take on it is that the Russians, they believe their security is best served by having their neighbors and adversaries in disarray. At the 2016 election, everyone thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. Therefore, they did their meddling to try to weaken her position. And now at this last turn with this press conference and all of the investigation into Russian meddling and the fake collusion angle to it all, just serves to have a weakened president and a weakened country. So Russia, in essence, is winning game, set, and match in our home court for having the United States as a world power. And I think President Trump, who I'm a firm supporter of, kind of failed miserably on this last press conference.
Mm-hmm.
He's not taking the position of calm, cool, and collected, which would derail everything that the Russians are trying to do with regards to us. Yeah. Having said that, I think the Mueller investigation is a witch hunt into him, or is being used as a witch hunt into him, and not a counterintelligence investigation like it should be.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Dan.
That was good comments. Thanks for the call, Pete.
But I was left wondering, what is in it for us?
What's in it for us in terms of meeting with Putin?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have all of these issues. You have stability in Eastern and Central Europe with against the backdrop of a KGB thug who wants to recreate the glory days of the Soviet Union. That's destabilizing. You've
they
got
don't have
obviously
fair elections in Russia now, do they?
Well, I'm not. That's sort of way down the list. I mean, it's the expansionist tendencies of Putin. It's the efforts to undermine NATO and Western alliance common defense. It's their nuclear arsenal. It's their presence in Syria. It's their financing of a nuclear Iran. Have we forgotten about the Russia-Iran relationship? Tom in Deer Park.
Good morning. Now Russia, previously the Soviet Union, has not been an adversary, but has been an enemy for 100 years. Dan, you just touched on all the subjects, including Iran, and what they do. They sow dissent, not through sending nuclear missiles, the threat of nuclear missiles, or even an army. They do dissent through our social media, and they're also doing dissent through our institutions. And I really respect what you do, because I'm hearing callers that, in my opinion, are inured by Fox News and talk radio, and it's a dangerous situation. I can't put my finger on it, but I know it when I see it, and it scares me. I hope that these callers... Pardon?
I said, okay, Potter Stewart, you know, the Potter Stewart, the opinion about pornography, I know it when I see it. Never mind. Sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
Yeah, right, right. I get that. So anyway, it's just, I don't know if I'm crossing a line here, but the percentage of callers that have this view that they want to talk about Mueller and servers when we're talking about the greatest enemy that we have to our republic, it frightens me, and I hope it's not a percentage of the listening audience in this country, because if it is, then their ways to sow dissent in our country have been effective. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Tom. Joe on the South Side. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Good. Get out of the wind.
Speak up a little louder.
Speak up a little.
I wonder, has anybody thought that maybe Trump is right? I mean, look at who they handed the dossier off to. Biggest critic, another Republican out there in Arizona. And I'm with Trump. I don't trust the Department of Justice, the FBI, CIA, any of them. They're all arrayed against Trump.
All right.
Not only that, I think he was a little tired when he was up there at the podium.
Thanks for the call, Joe.
Did you see
good luck out there, Wendy.
Yeah. Hold on to your hat. Any of you see at the end of the press conference, though, when Trump shook his hand and then he gave him like the half bro hug, and Putin would have none of it. He's like, "Get off me!" And he was still in charge, and he was an hour late to the meeting to show he was still in charge. That's why I think some people thought that President Trump got played by Putin, because everything was on his terms.
Yeah, yeah. You know, all the body language experts and interpreting geopolitical interpretations of a wink. Of the, a half bro thing or whatever.
But
I mean,
it was
good grief.
The wink didn't bother me, but that at the end, I thought, that's.
I mean,
they're not going to kiss on the first date. They just, it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
No.
He's a gentleman. Jim in Tampa, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. A couple quick points. Dan, you had said this is about, for Trump, it's personal. Everything's personal for Trump. That's how he does all of his politics. So that really doesn't make anything different there. The second point is, how many times have we been in this spot where we are saying, I can't believe Trump has done this. This is it. This is the craziest thing. It's over. Third part is, Tom and Deer Park, don't insult people. It's just not, people think for themselves. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jim.
I thought it was over when he talked about Megyn Kelly bleeding from her eyes and other places, and then I thought it was over when he said John McCain was a war hero because he got caught.
The standard
isn't going away.
Yeah, we shouldn't be talking about it like that. We should talk about, was that productive? Was that a good moment? Was that helpful? Tony in Elgin.
Yeah. So regards to that last caller, I do agree with him to the fact of. when everybody thinks that it's over, but we do have to have some sort of standard for everybody. And I mean, I don't want to be like the left on with Obama, where they just worshipped him. Everything he did, there was nothing wrong that he could do. And I feel like we're going down that path sometimes. So I feel like we do need to be like, hey, Trump, that's not cool. That's not good. You know, and kind of steer him off to the good stuff that he does.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Something
yes.
more like that.
No, I think that's right, Tony. I think that's exactly right. I mean, there have to be standards that exist outside the man. Otherwise, we have, and we're supporting the rule of men over the rule of law. We don't want to do that.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11 right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Updating a couple of stories we discussed yesterday. CVS and CPD, the incident with the alleged fake coupon at Northside CVS, and obviously the more serious case, the Chicago Police Department. Police-involved shooting of a Mr. Augustus in the South Shore neighborhood who had a weapon on him, resisted arrest, shot and killed. Protests ensued, some violence against Chicago police over the weekend, leading to peaceful protests on Sunday, and then more protests yesterday.
Yeah, last night. This is 3 days in a row where people have gathered at that same intersection on 71st Street demanding answers.
Hey! Oh! These killer cops have got to go!
And this is the thing. They,
these
the
killer
people,
cops have got to
yeah,
go. Huh?
Killer cops. That's what they're shouting yesterday. And this is what the community asked police for. They said, hey, you know, it would help if you put beat patrol officers back on the street just to walk down the sidewalks to make sure we're safe. But then this happened.
That cop had no business over here.
Yeah, that cop had no business over here. No, that's what you asked for during your community policing meetings. That's what they wanted.
I don't think, you know, some people are not going to be reached with reason.
Right.
Yeah.
But everybody thinks that this is discrimination and he was shot because he was African American.
We're not trying to hide anything. We're not.
And I think that Mr. Augustus' constitutional rights were violated.
We're not trying to hide anything. We're not trying to fluff anything. The video speaks for itself.
And of course, Black Lives Matters were there. That's something that's different. They started coming. They went on Sunday night outside the police department and then yesterday to South Shore.
I know when I watched the video, I saw someone who had his ID out trying to show his ID to the police getting gunned down.
That's
I did
right.
not see anyone reaching for a weapon. I saw someone getting killed.
Well, then you watched a different video that I have not seen, because the video that I saw was a man who resisted arrest, spun away from police officers, exposing a gun, and in the video, one magazine in his belt. A holstered gun, one magazine. In fact, he had two magazines that was recovered at the scene, and looking to reach for his gun. But the bottom line is he resisted arrest and he had a weapon on him and his hand was near his belt and he just didn't follow orders. And I got this Facebook post from this leftist troll who listens to the show. It's so funny. Like,
what'd he say?
He's like, said, oh, it's, you know, so ignorant and it's so racist and this and that. Just say, obey police. Well, okay. Then, look, it's a hell of a thing to kill somebody. I'm not happy that Mr. Augustus is dead. And I don't think the Chicago police and the police officer that shot him, are either. So what would you do? You want to hash this out on the street? Is that what you think is smart? I mean, just from a common sense perspective, just forget all of the other nonsense. Even if you think the police are some systemically racist organization, and maybe especially if you do. No, I don't, but let's say you do. The systemically racist organization, four cops are around you. You know you have a weapon on you. What are you going to do? Resist? Does that make sense?
Well, some people are claiming now that they thought he was reaching for his wallet and not for the gun. But if you look at the video, the wallet's already out. Then he puts it away and reaches for his gun.
Say he was reaching for his wallet. Say he was reaching for his ID. He clearly resisted. He clearly was moving and flailed away from police. That happened. So I ask again, it's a very simple question. How do you think it's going to go? take the perspective of Black Lives Matter. Take the perspective, the worst perspective possible on police generally. So when you're confronted by four police officers, you think you're going to hash it out by resisting. You think that's going to go well for you? So do you want people to be safe? And even if they're treated improperly by police, have the opportunity to adjudicate that while they're living? Does that make more sense to you? Or does it make more sense to you for the response that you see in some of these instances? Resistance, flight, threatening actions, or actions that could be interpreted as threatening? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. It's almost like they use this Augustus guy or others who've been killed by police. They don't care about those individuals. They don't want them to. I shouldn't say they don't want them. They use them as mascots.
While they're trying
to make their political case.
And BLM and this other coalition, they're trying to find his family. All they know is that he lived alone. He worked at the barbershop and he had a 5-year-old daughter. So they're desperately trying to find them to get them in front of the cameras, to sign them up with an attorney. That's what, I mean, that's, you know, conjecture on my part, but that's what I think is happening. We know that he did have a FOID card, but he did not have a concealed carry license.
You have a civilian police authority, you know, COPA, Cabana.
Don't stop.
You have that to investigate. You can retain counsel and pursue a remedy in court if you think there's a remedy to be had here.
Yeah, but they have to find their family first.
Well,
some living kin.
Yes, yeah, some living kin because he's dead.
Right.
And I think it's difficult to argue that he had taken my advice and not taken the posture. I guess this is the posture of Black Lives Matter and these leftists who troll me and others who just say comply and live to resolve the matter in a court of law or through an administrative process within the police department.
They want the police officer arrested.
I mean,
it's crazy. But these are their demands. I'm just saying I'm not agreeing with them, but I'm just telling you the fact this is what they want.
Great. And the let's arrest the police officer. Is that bringing Mr. Augustus back? I want to hear from Black Lives Matter or from these, you know, internet tough guys who suggest that compliance with the police, do not resist the police, listen to what the police say and follow orders when you're in a confrontation with police, and live to adjudicate whatever maltreatment you think you may have experienced through the channels that have been set up. That is sensible. Or resisting arrest and getting in people's faces and making threatening actions and not complying with police orders. That's a smart thing to do. What do you think? What's the smart thing to do if you want people to live, if you don't want to put cops in difficult positions where maybe they make a legitimate judgment call and maybe they don't make a legitimate judgment call? Which is it? And by the way, it is worth noting that you've got hundreds of thousands of stops, hundreds of thousands of interactions between Chicago police and residents every year, right? And again, so far in 2018, 4 killed in police-involved shootings, 9 wounded in a city where so far in 2018, there's been north of 1,200 shootings and more than 240 people murdered in shootings. Dennis in Crystal Lake, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Dan, Amy. Dan, I'm a pretty reasonable guy.
Yes, and, that's your reputation.
Thank you, Dan.
Yes.
But anyways, I got into an argument with a guy in a restaurant. Like, a long story short, cops came in and trying to separate, you know, the argument, trying to calm things down. Well, I didn't listen to the cops like I should have. And they gave me 3 chances. And I didn't have a gun or anything on me, but they tased me. The first one didn't stick.
Sure.
So they tased me again.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is and then they took me to the whack shack for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So needless to say, I never again have not complied with
the police. When they pull me over or whatever, I do not need to be tased again.
Well, how old were you when this happened?
It was last week.
No, it was probably last year.
Oh.
All right.
Okay. Well, how did it feel to be tased? I mean, I know it doesn't tickle, but...
It actually, it's kind of a weird thing. I don't know. Have you ever been shocked by anything greater than 110 voltage?
Yes.
Yeah, when she had to get the demons exercised. Yes, right. We put her.
Okay.
We put her through shock therapy.
By electrical outlet, but yeah. So it felt like that.
Well. Then you've really never been shocked, unless you've been shocked by something around 240. It basically just makes you feel like you're numb as heck, and you fall to the ground like a mannequin.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, don't stay out of trouble, Dennis.
Yeah.
That's after you turned my marriage proposal down. I got into a little drunken brawl.
Maybe think about making dinner at home for a little while.
I haven't left home since then.
All right, very good. Thanks for the call, Dennis.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling, and thanks for telling us your story.
Yeah. But actually, it points out something because, you suggested yesterday maybe they could have tased him.
Yeah.
It took two to put Dennis down in the restaurant.
240 volts?
Yeah. But no, seriously, so you can tase someone, they can still have a weapon, or you tase someone and it doesn't disable them and they have a weapon. It's a problem.
And that's what I spoke with a police officer yesterday from CPD, and he said the same thing. He's like, we wouldn't know if it would take him down for sure.
Right.
And he was clearly, if you watch the video, grabbing his weapon.
Mike on the north side.
Good morning, kids. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. Does anyone believe that if he resisted arrest and was running away, he would change his mind and pull out an ID? And second of all, if the Chicago Police Department are so racist, how come we have fewer blacks in county jail now, fewer blacks being arrested, and fewer blacks going to trial than any time in the last 25 years?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call, Mike.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
I'm Lou.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Total American student loan debt, $1.4 trillion. 2015-2016 school year, the average debt at graduation for students receiving bachelor's degrees was north of $30,000. Parents' debt has gone up about 14% over the last 5 years, the five-year study through the 2015-2016 school year, to $33,291. Something for you to look forward to with Peyton and Eli.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's great. You'll have the rest of your life to pay it off. Won't that be fun?
Well, they have to pay it off? I never.
Well, you don't. Yeah,
I mean, I got one.
You're not required by law to finance
your
college
but
education.
I had help one semester from my family, and then the rest I had to pay myself. I had to pay my student loans. And I worked. I worked as a waitress for 4 years at Sports Column just to have money. And then that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
So why do I mean, do you have to pay for your kids to go to college?
No, you don't. In fact,
why would I want to waste $200,000 all said and done for what?
Well, there's a predicate question. Should your kids go to college at all?
Or should they go straight into the trades or now straight into the military? Because they're getting a taste of that this week.
Well, let me give you an example of what's happening, what college campuses are producing. Let me introduce you to the de facto head of the Democratic Party in this country. Her name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She won that Democrat congressional primary. She's going to be a member of Congress come January. This is an interview that she gave on the new Firing Line show with Margaret Hoover about the Middle East.
Oh, boy. She's 28 years old, keep in mind.
Boston University grad.
But I am, of course, the dynamic there in terms of geopolitics
of
and the
course.
War in the Middle East is very different than people expressing their First Amendment right to protest.
Well, yes, but I also think that what people are starting to see, at least in the occupation of Palestine,
Palestine.
just an increasing crisis of humanitarian condition. And that to me is just where I tend to come from on this issue. You use the term the occupation of Palestine. What did you mean by that?
I think what I meant is like the settlements
that are increasing in some of these areas and in places where Palestinians are experiencing difficulty in access to their housing and homes.
Do you think you can expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd also just...
I don't think I am
not the expert on geopolitics on this issue.
Oh, thanks for that grand concession.
I sit down for that interview in the first place. Oh, my gosh, like watching a horror film through your hand. I just want it to stop.
I know some words. I know, like, West Bank and settlements and Palestinians and Yasser Arafat and the PLO and...
Who's she saying? The occupation of
Abbas and Netanyahu. So I'm just going to do, like, a word jumble and then just kind of social justice emote my answer on the topic. This is why our friend Jason Hill, philosophy professor over at DePaul, is suggesting to not fund dear old alma mater, to walk away, to go galt, as it were, from higher education. Our universities risk losing their status as learning sites and becoming national security threats, writes Hill. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Jason Hill, who's got a new book out, I'll have you know. And let me just get that up here for you so I can properly promote Jason Hill's new book. It's an immigrant story, We Have Overcome, and it's an immigration story to the an immigration letter to the American people, who is Jason Hill is an immigrant from Jamaica. Jason, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan and Amy.
Good morning. Universities risk becoming national security threats. That's pretty strong language. What do you mean?
Well, I mean that they are becoming propaganda machines. They've been that way for a while. They've become propaganda machines. They've ceased to become objective learning centers where they disseminate knowledge objectively and dispassionately to their students, and they have become propaganda machines where they do the very same thing that Alexandra Cortez, we heard her doing, where what they do is they really indoctrinate their students in the humanities and the social sciences. And we find it happening now in the law schools with a steady dose, a steady diet of radical left-wing ideology. They're basically indoctrinating their students into left-wing ideology, socializing them into becoming socialists, where cultural Marxism is the basic ideological trope through which all knowledge is filtered, whether it's philosophy, whether it's literature. The literature departments are the worst. Whether it's history, everything is read through a cultural Marxist lens. And a cult of victimology, a cult of ideology, is the dominant trope through or schema through which you are meant to view yourself and view society as, and especially America, as an imperialistic, intrinsically, irrevocably racist, unjust society. And to do that, you have to dispense with reason. You have to dispense with argumentation. You have to shut down free speech, basically. And we're seeing this increasingly across campus, where it's the radical left that is predominantly the enemy of free speech, because you can't have open contestation and debate of these stupid, nefarious ideas if you have free speech.
Well, are there any college campuses or universities that still have, where free speech is still alive?
I mean, I think there are a couple of colleges. I think, like, you know, colleges like Hillsdale and a couple religious universities that paradoxically, ironically, you would think religious universities would be the ones that would be inimical to this kind of approach. But I think there are probably a handful of universities that are still open to free speech. But I think even those, the important thing, Amy, is that even those universities that might be amenable to free speech are caving into student pressure themselves, because these students have a sense of, they live in these curated silos or silos, however you pronounce it in a different country. I can never get the pronunciation right. These curated silos where they have never heard perspectives outside of their own, and where increasingly their professors are not giving them a different perspective or a balanced perspective, and university administrators are who are well-intentioned people who probably would like to have them hear a different perspective, cave into the students and the professoriate perspectives and shut down free speech. I was just speaking with an administrator from a university recently who said, you know, we want to have intellectual diversity, but when the vetting process begins and we have students and professors from these different departments, you know, all hell breaks loose. So you have a speaker like Condoleezza Rice, who is really at the vetting process declared to be a hate speaker.
Yeah.
Now, there's no lower place to go in educational hell, I think, when someone like Condoleezza Rice, who's actually quite a moderate on the conservative spectrum, is classified as a hate speaker.
Well, and you're suggesting that this is beyond salvaging, that university grads should defund their alma maters, that the only way that you're going to see structural change, cultural change on the college campus is for the universities to pay an economic price.
Yeah, in my book, We Have Overcome, I have an immigrant's letter to the American people. I have a huge session in there where I just gave a small version of the article. But in the book, I go into a great deal where I really make an appeal to business, to businessmen and women and alumni donors and to the federal government, because private universities also receive funding, that stop funding your destroyers. Unless you pay an economic price, there's no incentive for the professoriate and for these students who are the mouthpieces really of their professors to stop mouthing these kinds of conceptual inanities really that don't match up with the intellectual world. We continue to incentivize them to condemn the hands that feed them, business people, corporate organizations. And until they can really, universities can really hire, you know, professors who have alternative viewpoints and not incidentally fire professors or deny them tenure or scare the wits out of them, those professors who will teach alternative viewpoints in their classrooms, then there will be no solution. There will be no alternative, really.
But if we defund DePaul, there will be no philosophy professor Jason Hill. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Well, it's not just DePaul. I don't want to single out my own university here because, I mean, it's, you know, I don't mean to use my university as an example, and I'm not using my university as an example.
Although your university hasn't been great in the last couple of years.
Well, I think what will happen very quickly is that, you know, universities are not, although they are traditionally nonprofit institutions, I think what will happen is that we will see a restructuring very, very quickly because.
So that they'll reinstate chalk on the campus of DePaul that's been banned, for example?
It's not that they'll reinstate chalk. I think what we'll see very happening once a defunding and disbanding happening is that from a top-down perspective, from the perspective of the presidency, the provost, and the deanships, that we will see massive restructuring happening very, very quickly. And once alumni donors start stipulating that as a condition of the endowments that I'm making, that you have to hire or you have to affix, the money that is being donated is not unconditional, that you have to teach conservative values, you have to teach American values, you have to teach pro-capitalist values, you have to teach values that espouse individualism, self-reliance, the morality of wealth creation, pro-American values. You see, very often these people, these corporations just give them money without any kind of conditions affixed to them. I think once we have something like that happening, you would see a radical change in universities. And you'd still see a Jason Hill at DePaul very quickly because universities are not going to lose their top talent that quickly.
There you go. Top talent, Jason Hill. No question about it. Philosophy professor at DePaul, Jason Hill, the book We Have Overcome. an immigrant's letter to the American people. Jason, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
And also, you can get a long-form interview, more of Jason's reflections. He sat down for an Against the Current interview at upstream-ideas.com several months back. A really good conversation with Jason Hill. More information from him at that site.
And Dr. Hill joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Just in case you thought the left was only becoming unglued about the Trump-Putin press conference yesterday after their sit-down, don't forget Judge Brett Kavanaugh is still out there waiting for his confirmation hearings to proceed. Yeah, they can't start fast enough as far as I'm concerned. This thoughtful piece from the left at the Think Progress site.
Wait, did you say Kavanaugh, though?
If Kavanaugh is confirmed, you can kiss the right to vote goodbye. So if Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed, the left believes we are going to lose, and minorities, of course, in particular, the Solidarity and Marginalia play, we're going to lose our right to vote. You understand why it's so difficult to take the anti-intellectual left, and I repeat myself, seriously. If Kavanaugh is confirmed, you can kiss the right to vote goodbye.
Kiss the right to vote goodbye. Okay.
No voting.
Lost their minds.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. Now what? Huh? Now what when it comes to Trump and Putin? We'll talk about that when Freedom returns at 5.
Hey. Good morning, Dan and Amy. All right, let's run the gamut of reaction from most hysterical to least yesterday. See where you fall on the spectrum. Of course, here's a former CIA director and inveterate liar, John Brennan, on President Trump's presser after the sit-down with Putin.
I cannot understand how the national security team can continue to abide by this and how Pompeo and Bolton and Kelly can continue in their jobs. This, I think, rises to the point of good American patriots resigning in objection to that performance by Donald Trump. Again, words, I'm at a loss of words to describe just how outrageous his words, his statements, his behavior has been. And one can only conclude that he fears Vladimir Putin, and that one-on-one discussion, who knows what was discussed there, and how Mr. Putin now is the master puppeteer of Donald Trump, the person who is in our Oval Office.
Yeah, a lot of facts, not in evidence there, but the accusation of rising to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors, treasonous. That's what the left has been saying. Also, the conspiracy theories about passing intelligence in their private meeting, about having compromising information. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley suggested something like the P-tape does exist. Well, let's present it then. Usually a more sensible voice, a calm arbiter of affairs, Neil Cavuto at Fox Business had this to say.
This was the time and the place for the president to look Putin squarely in the eye and said, you will be punished for what you did in 2016 and don't ever think about doing that again.
But he didn't. And that's what made it disgusting. That's what made his performance disgusting. I'm sorry, this is the only way I feel. It's not a right or left thing to me. It's just wrong. A U.S. president on foreign soil talking to our biggest enemy or adversary or competitor, I don't know how we define them these days, is essentially letting the guy get away with this and not even, you know, offering a mild criticism. That sets us back a lot.
So you go from Brennan and some of the co-conspiracy theorists to Cavuto.
And Laura Ingraham, she chimed in as well. And then there's, you know, Republican lawmakers. Of course, you know, John McCain, we knew that was going to happen. Jeff Flake, Senator Flake. But Bob Corker said something. Kevin McCarthy piped in.
Yes.
I mean, this is Kevin McCarthy.
I believe the intelligence community and also the House Intelligence Committee that Russia meddled in it. We should do everything we can to hold them accountable.
So those are the more mild rebukes and just restating confidence in the intelligence community as well as his colleagues on the Hill who've been investigating these same matters, like Devin Nunes's committee. And then Stephen Cohen yesterday on Tucker Carlson, the well-respected Russian studies professor, formerly of NYU as well as Princeton. He had this to say about the greatest threat now facing our representative republic.
No, and nor have I in these decades you mentioned ever heard an elected member of Congress say that we should have no relations with the Russians at all. Presumably that would include nuclear weapons control. When I see, I guess it was a Democrat, it's on the bottom of your screen, asking what are the Russians doing in the White House anyway? Well, they're doing with President Trump the national security of our nation, because what's at stake here is a proposal by Putin of Russia, by Trump of America, to join hands in an alliance against international terrorism.
Right.
And I would have asked you, if you had asked me a few days ago, what's the number one threat to the United States today? I would have said international terrorism. I don't know if you agree, Tucker, but it's certainly up there. Today, I would say it's this assault on President Trump, because it's been going on a year. And can we be clear? What he's being accused of is treason. This has never happened in America, that there's a Russian agent in the White House. And we've had a whole array of allegations, from Putin helped him get in the White House to his associates are doing wrong things with Russians, that Flynn did something wrong in talking, his former national security advisor did something wrong with talking to the Russian ambassador. There's no evidence that there was any wrongdoing, and indeed Flynn should have talked to the Russian ambassador. That was his job. So this is beyond belief now, and has become, by this I mean this assault on Trump and his loyalty, this has become a national security threat to us in itself.
So do we have Staff Sergeant Raymond Shaw in the White House, or is Professor Cohen right? Where's the truth? Somewhere in the middle. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Cliff May, President of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Cliff, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Always good to be with you guys.
So where do you fall on that spectrum, or are you on the Y-axis?
Look, I think it's very simple. I mean, I obviously do not agree with people like John Brennan, who have gone totally hysterical and are using this to further their anti-Trump agenda. Do I think that Trump's performance yesterday was Monday was disappointing? Absolutely, it was disappointing. He wasn't prepared properly, and he didn't seem to be able to navigate some pretty rocky waters. Why were they rocky? Because Putin is very much an adversary of the U.S. He is running a country that is and has been killing people. He has taken territory by military force from his neighbors. This is now the third president in a row who cannot seem to deal properly with Putin and with Russia. I don't know quite why that is. I'm sorry this was a disappointing performance. I don't think lasting damage was done. As far as we know, no agreements were made. We still have sanctions on Russia. But if you're going to call balls and strikes, I think you have to say that in this instance, President Trump got up at bat and he whiffed it.
What is the proper way to deal with Putin?
You know, Reagan got along with Gorbachev, who was a much better Russian leader than is Putin, and yet he was also willing to say, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." He could talk to him, he could deal with him, he'd negotiate with him, but he also was strong on the issues that are of vital interest to the U.S. You are not deferential to Putin. There may be things you don't want to answer. You try to see if you can if you can find common ground, but you let him know that we are the strong nation, you are not, and a lot of what you have been doing, we not only disapprove of, we condemn. You don't go around murdering people in other countries, for one thing. You don't go around stealing the land of your neighbors by military force. If you look at the NATO declaration that came out last week, It very clearly says that NATO exists in large measure because Russia is violating international law on so many levels, and we have to defend the West from Russia. Well, if that's the case, you do not in public act quite so deferential towards Putin as if he is somebody who deserves great respect. Listen, I will say, you know, Putin is very clever. He's very savvy. He knows how to play even a weak hand, which is all he has, and you consider that he's got an economy about the size of South Korea's. He plays a weak hand well. When it comes to Syria, where he's done terrible damage, he has facilitated over 500,000 deaths by Bashar Assad and Hezbollah and Iran. If you recall back, we had Obama saying, oh, that's going to be a quagmire. Well, it was a quagmire. There are a lot of things that are a quagmire for Obama are not going to be a quagmire for Putin because he knows how to use the military force he has effectively. But of what he is doing in many parts of the world, many of his activities are not just illegal. They are absolutely antithetical to the vital security interests of the United States and the West, and that should be clear in all dealings with him.
And let's not forget, you know, the downing of Malaysian Flight 17 over Ukrainian airspace. I mean, that the four-year anniversary was yesterday
exactly. Of
that, and he didn't hold him accountable to that atrocity either. And that's what upset me the most.
I think you're absolutely right. There are so many things Putin has done that we could just go through. The murdering of journalists in the streets of Moscow, abroad, elsewhere. Just so, there's absolutely so much. And look, I think this has to be made clear and not conflated. Did Russia meddle? Did they intervene? Did they hack in terms of the most recent elections? Absolutely, that's clear. Did Putin and Trump collude in any way? No, there's no evidence of that whatsoever. Did Putin's actions in this election change the results of the elections? There's not a scintilla of evidence to suggest that's true. Now, part of the problem is that the opponents, not just critics, of President Trump conflate those things so that if he acknowledges that, yeah, no question the Russians were messing around with our elections, then people will think, and that's why Hillary lost, which is not the case. But what Russia was trying to do, I think, and I think it's pretty clear, is undermine our belief in our system of democracy. So he could say, as he does, you have a democratic system, it's very imperfect. We have a democratic system, I'm not claiming it's perfect, but they're essentially equivalent.
Well, that was really the low point in the press conference, right? It was not just the question of who do you believe, but it was Trump behaving like Putin and engaging in moral equivalencies between the United States and Russia the same way that Putin attempted to do, to say you call your country a democratic country, small d, I call my country a democratic country. Well, your country is an autocratic country and you're a dictator, and ours is a representative republic and he's a temporary president. Those are two very different things.
Exactly right. It would not have been hard, it seems to me, for Trump to say, I have an intelligence community. They've told me what happened during this election. I'm not pleased about it. I'm not pleased about what you did, and I expect it to stop. You don't have to admit it, but I expect it to stop. Don't do that again.
And
it's not friendly, and there will be repercussions if you continue along this road.
Well, and too, the whole matter of Russian meddling, you know, people say, oh, well, you don't want to offend, and you don't, you know, there's no new reason to antagonize because you're trying to make the bigger, better deal with respect to nuclear proliferation and Syria and Iran and other geopolitical interests. But I'm sorry, you made it clear, and Putin made it clear at the press conference, that they disagree about Crimea, that Putin sees this as a legitimate annexation by referendum and Trump doesn't, which is, and Trump's position, of course, is correct. So if you can openly disagree about Crimea, if you can openly criticize Germany for doing a deal on an energy pipeline with the Russians, then why can't you openly express a difference of opinion on whether or not Russia meddled in the election, no matter how vociferously, you know, a thug like Putin says he didn't?
I think that's exactly right. I think a lot of times Trump believes in his own ability to go out there unprepared and wing it. And I suggest that's probably what happened this time. And what he needed to do was sit down with his very good advisors and prepare. There are things where he should have said, I'm just not even going to comment on that, or I'm going to leave us to disagree on that. I'm going to continue to look for common ground between the two countries, but I am also going to be very aware of the ways in which Russia is violating international law and is showing hostility towards America, towards the West, and towards our interests. And I'm going to hope that that changes, and if it doesn't, the repercussions will follow. His policies towards Russia have been tougher than the previous president and probably the one before that. Policies have been good, but this press conference, this was a big disappointment, I think.
What do you think about Stephen Cohen's observations?
It's interesting. Cohen is a man of the left, but he is very defensive of Putin, has been for a long time, yeah. Too defensive of Putin generally. What he said in the bite you played, I can't really disagree with. But I'm not on board with Professor Cohen on many things.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, including his marriage to Katrina VandenHeuvel.
Well, exactly. I'd like to see some of the breakfast conversations between the two of them, because The Nation magazine is calling Trump a traitor and is trying to impeach him and just looking every day for the reason that they can do it that particular day, which is what so many of Trump's enemies get up every day to do. And yet Steve Cohen was very defensive of Trump in this instance.
Well, and it's, you know, the left, all of a sudden, their newfound antagonism for the Soviets. It's really interesting to watch, considering they were aghast when Ronald Reagan took a hard line, called the Soviet Union the evil empire, even as he did develop that relationship with Gorbachev that you alluded to. And then more recently, they ridiculed, of course, Mitt Romney for suggesting that Russia posed a threat to our country. So it's great to have the left on board in terms of being anti-totalitarianism for a change.
Exactly. The hypocrisy is enormous.
All right. He is Cliff May, president for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Cliff, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Did Trump disgrace America with his comments at the post-Putin meeting press conference yesterday? 312-642-5600, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. He got off to a good start. I thought this remark about political risk-taking was very productive.
But our relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of about 4 hours ago. I really believe that. Nothing would be easier politically than to refuse to meet, to refuse to engage, but that would not accomplish anything. As president, I cannot make decisions on foreign policy in a futile effort to appease partisan critics or the media or Democrats who want to do nothing but resist and obstruct. Constructive dialogue between the United States and Russia affords the opportunity to open new pathways toward peace and stability in our world. I would rather take a political risk in pursuit of peace than to risk peace in pursuit of politics.
Well, that was a nice turn of a phrase, and that's eminently a reasonable position for the president to take, given the geopolitical threat that Russia poses and our interests with respect to the threats that it poses. But then
he shocked the world.
Then it got a little dicey,
yeah.
when it came to the issue of
who do you love, who do you trust,
who do you believe,
Putin or your own U.S. intel?
People came to me. Dan Coates came to me, and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this: I don't see any reason why it would be.
Okay. You don't see any reason why it would be Russia. So Putin denies it. Dan Coates, his director of national intelligence, not a Democrat, not Obama, not Brennan, not Hayden, not Mueller. Go down the list. Not Hillary Clinton. His director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, former Republican senator from Indiana, who Trump selected to be his director of national intelligence, as Trump just said, went to the president and said, believe it's Russia. There are dozens of indictments in absentia of Russian operatives and companies. There's a woman that was arrested yesterday, Maria Butina, charged with acting as an unregistered foreign agent. She was working with a Russian Federation official, allegedly charged with developing and executing a plan to identify and exploit personal connections with U.S. persons having influence in American politics who were in positions to advance the interests of the Russian Federation. She set up like a phony baloney gun group, yeah. pro-2A group,
trying to infiltrate. Get into the NRA to try and lead to Republican operatives.
So there's confusion here?
Well, but then he went further. It seemed to seem as if President Trump was boasting about making some progress with an alleged Russian hacking scheme.
I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
Yeah, I don't.
So Russians didn't hack, but yet he's going to help him in investigate the Russian hacking.
Yeah, I mean, and O.J. Simpson's going to search for the real killers. I mean, this is stupid. This is dumb. And it's no, it's not a generous offer. And I mean, the interplay between Putin and Trump and the press corps, you know, will you allow the U.S. to extradite the 12 individuals who've been indicted? Well, you know, put that request through the proper channel, said Putin. And then we also may be interested in extraditing some Americans. So we'll have to put that through the proper channels as well. No Russians are going to be extradited to the United States, and no Americans are going to be turned over to the Russians. Okay, so can we just stop with the nonsense and focus on the issues? And,
well, but President Trump seemed to celebrate that idea. Like, look, I've accomplished something. And we may have Robert Mueller come to Moscow to interview these people.
That's absurd. That's absurd. And so, covering that moral equivalency with that absurdity did not put President Trump in a positive light, in my estimation. It just seems to me, and I don't understand why this is complicated. And I haven't heard a particularly compelling argument from people who are kind of will defend Trump regardless of what he says or does. So, you know, on the merits here, and don't tell me Obama, Clinton, deep state, be specific if you want to chime in on this. Number one, there's public disagreement on a range of other issues that were discussed, like Crimea, Putin's invasion of Crimea. I'm sure other matters. I mean, President Trump at NATO was critical of Germany for inking a deal with the Russians for the Russians to provide energy to Germany. Appropriate. Fine. So you obviously disagree because the Russians inked that deal. So you disagree on that issue, too. Why can't you disagree on Russian hacking? It's not just Mueller and Department of Justice. It's not just your director of national intelligence. It's also House and Senate intelligence committees that are controlled by Republicans, that are controlled by Trump allies, generally speaking, like Devin Nunes, the House Intelligence Committee chairman. What did his April report say? And what did he say about it over the weekend? Well, the indictment that Mueller handed down on Friday against those 12 Russian intelligence officers basically tracks the report my committee produced and made public in April. So I'm sorry, what's the confusion here? Why is it so difficult to accomplish two things that are not mutually exclusive at the same time? You can be critical of the decisions made by senior leaders at FBI and DOJ and the Mueller investigation, and at the same time recognize KGB Putin, a totalitarian, murderous dictator, as an enemy of the state, and make it very clear, draw lines of moral clarity between the United States and Russia, between the President of the United States and the dictator of Russia. I don't see why that's complicated. Dave in DeKalb, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, well, I liked what you just said. I'm a supporter of his, but here's my issue. It seems to me that Trump has been slapping Putin every single step of the way since he became president. He sent missiles into Syria. That's a provocation. He talked to Germany about their gas deal with him. all these different things. And then he sits down, shakes the guy's hand, hands him an olive branch. You know, he's been tough on Putin, if you ask me, tougher than our other president.
Yes.
And does he trust the people that are advising him? I mean, the whole government is after him. I certainly wouldn't lend any credence to anything anybody's saying about me if everyone wanted my skin.
So he shouldn't trust his director of national intelligence. He shouldn't trust House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes. He shouldn't trust Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Richard Burr. He shouldn't trust those allies, erstwhile allies.
If I was him, under the circumstances, I would have a hard time trusting anybody in the government.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, hey, Dave. I mean, you know, it's this kind of one-man government. That's just not a sensible position. And the evidence does not support that contention. I'm sorry. But let's confront the evidence. I'm all for, you know, there's no reason to, you know, call him Little Vlad or come up with a nickname like it's a Republican presidential debate, okay? But why you can't draw lines of demarcation between the United States and our positions on these important matters, which they discussed in private, and the Russians, I haven't heard a compelling reason why you can't do that. John in Romeoville.
Yes, me?
Yes. Yes, you, John.
Yes. The media created this. If Trump acknowledges any meddling by Russia, the automatic headline within minutes would be Trump admits Russia got him elected. That would run ad nauseum on every single channel. And that's a fact. He didn't fall for the trap.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Tell me they wouldn't jump all over that like that. They would.
Right. And Trump could say on an international stage where everybody was watching, he could say, it's clear that the Russians attempted to influence the election, that the evidence is clear. And it's also clear, and this is not President Trump saying this, this is the Obama administration saying it. This is former Attorney General Loretta Lynch saying it, that they were unsuccessful, that the Russians did not compromise our election or its results. They attempted to, and those are two very different things.
There would never be any follow up like there would never be educated follow up like you just
Trump
did.
Trump has the platform. He can say anything.
It doesn't matter. The papers would just keep saying Trump admits.
That's nonsense. Okay, Trump. The papers isn't nonsense. The papers are going to say whatever they're going to say. All of the headlines, Politico, Putin's attack on the USSR Pearl Harbor, and all of the John Brennan stuff and everything else. They're going to say what they're going to say. The important thing is you say what you're supposed to say. You focus on what you're going to say and the message you want to drive. You don't make moral equivalencies between the United States and Russia because the D.C. press corps is aligned against you. That's built into the price. That's a weak excuse. Thanks for the call, John. Yemi on the north side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. What we know now is that Trump messed up yesterday. We know that Russia meddling in our election. But what we don't know is what the intelligence were doing for Russia to outsmart them, and what are they going to do in the future to prevent all this nonsense? Thank you.
That's a good question. That's a good topic of conversation. The steps that we're going to take to make sure that what was attempted in 2016 will be disincentivized from being attempted in 2018 and beyond, or at least will be protected from their latest and greatest efforts to incur into our electoral system, to elections, to the United States generally. Well, that'd be a good conversation. I agree with that. Makes sense. Elaine in Aurora.
Yeah, I agree totally with the previous caller said. No matter if he admitted that somebody had hacked into it, they'd say, oh, he admits he lost the election. Where is the Russians got in the election? Where is the evidence? Where is the evidence any of these guys?
It's in the House.
Any of these guys.
Okay.
Where's the evidence?
It's in the House.
What is it, Dan? What is it? What have they proven?
Are you going to let me answer, or are you just going to keep asking the same question?
There's a 12-count indictment.
There's,
if you want to read that, well, through that, and then the House intels.
Well, there's report. Congressional committee reports. there's indictments, not just the ones announced Friday, but the ones that were announced previously against the Concord company and all of its appendages with respect to the
Can these four people come forward and defend themselves that they've been trying to with Mueller? And Mueller's going, oh my God, they're going to defend themselves in court. Oh, what am I going to do? I got to delay this.
Well, it's very phony.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Elaine. I don't think we're going to get through to Elaine, so I'll concede the point. Megan on the South Side.
Hi. Good morning, guys. Hi. You know, to me, I remember President Obama saying something about, you know, any reasonable person would, you know, I mean, Russia always tries to influence our elections. China tries. They're trying currently by targeting areas of the Trump supporters with their tariff response. Mexico, as President Trump said, has been attempting to pack our electorate for years, to which Geraldo laughed at him. But I mean, it didn't influence the results of the election. So why should he kowtow to the press, which is, I think, what he was doing? He was not trying to make an international statement there. He was just refusing to kowtow to the press. And my other point is that don't you think Putin maybe has something on these Democrats who don't want Trump anywhere near the guy? Thanks.
Well, I mean, okay. I mean, thanks for the call, Megan. One is, like, saying what is obviously demonstrably true is not kowtowing to anybody. It's describing reality. Number two, the whole kind of, like, Putin has something on the Democrats. Well, now you're playing the same conspiracy theorist game that Schumer and Brennan and Pelosi are and Jeff Merkley from Oregon. Oh, he's got to have something. Oh, yeah, this happened in the private meeting. He, you know, in a coded way, he passed on intelligence, U.S. intelligence information. I mean, these are hysterical conspiracy theories that are being propagated and promulgated by the left all over the place. So now you want to play that game? No, let's not. Let's just kind of keep it tight. What do you think about that? And you can be forceful and yet get along. You know, get along in a way that you can dialogue with somebody. We're not, you know, bunkmates, but we're going to get along because we're going to work in advance of our respective interests and see if there's an intersection point. This is what Gorbachev said about President Reagan upon his death. In terms of human qualities, he and I had, you would say, communicativeness, and this helped us carry on normally. But when you talk about friendly relations in politics, it's not the friendship of schoolmates. And President Reagan, and it's memorialized in some of the documents at the Reagan Foundation website, made a point to reach out to Brezhnev, and then, you know, ultimately after Brezhnev's death, and then Andropov and Chernenko got to Gorbachev, and then this relationship. Reagan is given much of the credit that he deserves for ending the Cold War in America's favor. He engaged with Gorbachev. He met with him routinely. They did deals. And also, when he stood at Brandenburg Gate, he said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall," with Gorbachev present. You see the difference? You can you can exercise moral clarity and still achieve that communicativeness, to borrow a Gorbachev word, that you want from this adversary, recognizing that it's an adversary. Jason in Rockford, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, I was going to state that if I were Trump, I wouldn't trust the intelligence agencies either. They did try to frame him, and the best thing to do is just to keep on calling them out and not accept their false premises. I know you say there's evidence. Did they examine the servers yet? Did the FBI get the DNC servers? Or did they take the word from CrowdStrike that it was a hack from Russia? I don't buy it. I don't trust the intelligence agencies. Trump shouldn't either.
Thanks, Jason.
Clearly he doesn't. He said so yesterday.
Well, then he did say, trust my intelligence people. But I also got this vociferous denial by Putin. And that equivalency is troublesome. Bob and Lyle.
Hello. Thanks. You know, it's quite telling when the President Putin goes, "I would have voted for Trump over Hillary." That is his point of view, and he's welcome to it, just like any other Russian that wants to write an op-ed piece about the United States of America, good, bad, or indifferent. The problem is that our president has been continually plagued by NBC, CBS, you name them, and they have said nothing about this president that's ever been any good. I am an American. I am furious over Republicans and Democrats who's come against this president who's done nothing but try to do good. And just like the other caller said, you really believe that the FBI and the Justice Department gave Hillary a pass? If you don't believe that, then there's something wrong with the whole thing. When you get called out on it in front of the whole world, then you better take note that there's a lot of people in this country that are pissed off.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and been talking about the Trump-Putin summit meeting and post-game presser all morning that has set the Beltway ablaze with criticism of President Trump for his response to the Russian meddling question in terms of who do you believe? Do you believe your intelligence community or do you believe Putin's denials? President Trump said they did discuss it in private, said President Trump.
During today's meeting, I addressed directly with President Putin the issue of Russian interference in our elections. I felt this was a message best delivered in person. Spent a great deal of time talking about it, and President Putin may very well want to address it, and very strongly, because he feels very strongly about it.
Yeah, the president, the dictator, I should say, feels very strongly about it. He denied it unequivocally. President Trump, less strongly about it. He equivocated on the matter of whether the Russians attempted to meddle in the 2016 election or not, and this is gotten criticism from, you know, center right reasonable people like Neil Cavuto,
Newt Gingrich,
members of the House and Senate, Republicans, and then, of course, the hysterics from the left like John Brennan suggesting the president had committed treason. For more on this topic and also weave in the President Trump's remarks again about Peter Strzok, a topic he has been discussing since Strzok's testimony last Thursday. We're pleased to be joined by Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist, Fox News contributor. His latest piece, Peter Strzok's Arrogance, is the Product of a Corrupt FBI. Michael, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. I should let you know I also have a column today on the Putin-Trump press conference.
All right, well, give us your perspective on that, then.
Well, I believe the president made a mistake. I think that the equivocation, as you described it, is very disappointing. Look, I think that 18 months into his presidency, when his people are running these intelligence agencies, he appointed Dan Coats, Director of National Intelligence. He appointed Mike Pompeo, former head of CIA, now Secretary of State. He appointed Gina Haskell, now head of CIA. I mean, you go down the list, these are his people. And so when he says, essentially, you know, that he's not sure who's right about this, I mean, he's throwing his own people under the bus. And this is a big issue. And I think the president's mistake is that he has conflated two issues into one. The first issue, was there Russian meddling? And we have no evidence that says there wasn't. We have all of our intelligence communities of two administrations saying there was. On the second issue, though, I think the president has linked to that first issue is whether he colluded with Russia in that meddling. And of course, to that answer, to that question, he has to say no. No is his answer. There was no collusion. Unfortunately, I think in his mind, the two issues are linked. Did Russia meddle? was there collusion? He has made it one question and answers no to it. And I argue in my column today that it is a, these are separate issues, and you can answer them separately. You can say, yes, there was meddling, but no, there was no collusion. I didn't need any help. I won fair and square, and I will carry out my duties honorably I was elected fairly.
And it's real easy to separate the two? Just use an evidentiary standard. On the one hand, we have all the evidence that indicates Russian attempt to meddle in the election. And on the other hand, we have no evidence that me or anybody in my circle attempted to collude with the Russians or did collude with the Russians, because we didn't. So no evidence here, all the evidence there. And I base my conclusions on the evidence. Simple.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I don't for the life of me understand why he continues to give ammunition to those who would unseat him. I mean, he has, as you said in your opening, he has created a firestorm here now. And he's getting no help. No one is really in Washington is agree with him. You cannot agree with him on this. You cannot say this was a smart thing to do. I mean, I think the hysterics, of course, were looking for anything, and they're hysterical every day. They don't really need anything. But this is one, I think, that is so radical, such a departure, that it is hard to see what he's thinking other than this, as I say, this conflation of these issues where he mistakenly equates them. And the moral equivalency of, as a result here, between Dan Coats, his director of national intelligence, who says there was meddling by Russia, and Vladimir Putin, who says there isn't. I mean, so they're the same. They're equal in the president's eyes. He can't decide which is right. And then the general Russia versus America. Is there no difference? I mean, would you say what happened to America First? Where's right. The America First president who scolds Angela Merkel over her dealings with Russia? I mean, it just makes no sense.
Well, clearly he wants to press a reset button with Russia. But if you were Dan Coats this morning, would you resign after what Trump said yesterday?
You know, that's a question I've been asking myself. What about John Bolton, too? What about Gina Haskell? I mean, what does this do to the intelligence agencies? These people risk their lives, and some of them clearly made mistakes during the Obama White House. I mean, John Brennan is a despicable human being. I think he was trying to subvert the election. But there are many honorable, honest, hardworking people who in those agencies, many of whom who risk their lives. What are you saying to them? So, yes, Amy, to your question about Dan Coats, I mean, I'm sure it went through his mind. I hope he does not. I hope John Bolton doesn't quit. I hope Pompeo. I hope none of them do. I think they're important. But I'm not sure how the president cleans this up in a way that satisfies those people. And also, just if I could quickly, you know, when you played his description of his meeting with Putin, and he says, we discussed the issue. But he never says his opinion. He never said, I told him it was wrong. I told him not to do it. I warned him. I mean, I write a little speech in my column what he should have said. But the president, this is clearly how the president feels. He's not sure whether Dan Coats is right or whether Vladimir Putin is right. I mean,
it seems to me that he's conflating two issues here again. And one is his criticism of the senior leadership of FBI, CIA under Brennan, and justice. And there's legitimate criticism to be leveled there. We've talked about it with you on this show.
Sure.
But with taking a clear and a bright stance against who everyone knows is a KGB autocrat. I mean, you can be critical of one and still at the same time say, yeah, these guys tried to meddle in our election 16. They weren't successful. They didn't impact the outcome. And I told him, don't try that again, because we're taking steps to make sure nobody meddles in our election, whether they're Russian or Chinese or anybody else. A definitive statement like that ends it. It ends
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, and instead, he missed that opportunity, and he creates a firestorm. He creates lots of doubts about himself. Look, I don't know the damage, how much damage this will do, I mean, within the administration. What does it do to the confirmation of Kavanaugh? I don't know. Do Republican senators now find reasons not to support the president? So I think he has created some additional problems for himself, for his party, in the midterms. I mean, this was a major league mistake.
Well, you're right. You're right to point out the political capital problem, too, right? This doesn't occur in a vacuum. So you've got all of these other issues in addition to the 2018 election. And Democrats, of course, are going to be howling that, you know, the President Trump is inviting foreign influence into our midterm elections. And he's indifferent to the security of our elections, in addition to all of the other conspiracy theories they're putting out there.
Right. Yeah. Nothing. No criticism will be out of bounds now. Not that it has been, but this gives new life to something that he could have closed the books on yesterday. So I hope he makes a lot of efforts to clean it up so that it does not become a defining issue for going forward for other policies, for his presidency itself. And now any calls to end Mueller will be, you know, easily brushed aside. So I just think this is something that the president, if he could rewind the world for 24 hours, I hope he recognizes the damage he has done here.
Well, the other thing, too, is he sort of blunts the advantage that Peter Strzok gave him with his performance last week with the House Judiciary Committee and Lisa Page being whistled to the hill. You know, sort of he just can't help himself but to beat that drum, even when it's not necessary, or yesterday when it was sort of inappropriate.
Yes, I thought that too, that this is not the time or place for, you know, I mean, I think the president's points are well taken on Strzok and Comey and the email investigation. And I think all of that is true, understandable. And I also understand why the president is so fixated on this, because I think for him, it is fundamentally unfair. It has cast a cloud over his administration. It has made, I think, a lot of things more difficult because of this thing that any day now he could, get indicted or something like that hangs out there. And it gives fire to the resistance. That is the whole reason why the resistance movement exists, because of the Russia collusion issue. And yet, and there were people like Peter Strzok who hated him and who were investigating him at the same time. I mean, Comey, you go through all that. And yet, you could have, again, you have to separate. You have to separate those things. You can't lump them all together in a big ball, which is, again, what he did yesterday.
He is Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist, Fox News contributor. Michael, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you both.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.